Well, as you know, and certainly your listeners know, Hillary won, Secretary Clinton, I should say, won the vote in Colorado. So we're all a slate of Clinton electors. If Trump had won, then the slate of Trump electors would have been elected. So it's in some states it's proportional, as you probably know, but Colorado it's an all or nothing. So the Democratic Party, I've actually got the letter, is the one that basically confirmed our election. We get elected not by the public, but basically we get elected. I got elected at the Democratic State Convention. And I ran not as you know, my name was on there, but as a supporter of Hillary Clinton. So basically the people that elected me assumed that I would support Hillary Clinton, and the law basically commits us to doing that. I don't think anybody envisioned at that time an election of Donald Trump. And my emails and so forth are just inundated more as a state senator. Why don't we go to a majority vote? Why do we have an electoral college? You know, what can we do about this? Has been the question that's raised to me. And these Hamilton electors, Michael Baca has taken a huge role nationally. The whole intent is to try to come up as an alternative to Trump. But a Republican alternative. And that has not happened. No one has surfaced. John Kasich's name has been mentioned. And he is confirmed by, I think, Twitter that he's not interested. So there is no alternative person that's come up. But still, the Michael Bacas of the world still are hoping that we can come up with a candidate, a more moderate Republican, anyone other than Trump, I guess you would say, that all of us could vote for. That is going to be difficult, very, very difficult. And there was a lawsuit which basically would have allowed me not to be committed. That would have given me the freedom to do whatever I chose, but the federal district judge threw that out and said, basically, this was a political stunt. I don't think it's a political stunt. I think it's people are very fearful of what's happening. And then some other things have also happened. Now there's a suit asking that the electors, before they vote December 19th, be given the intelligence briefing, reference Russia's potential involvement in our election. So there's a lot going on out there that I never envisioned when I put my name in to be an elector for what I thought would be the first woman president of the United States.
Well, you did say that this is more than a political stunt, and it really reflects a very real fear. You know, anxiety is almost a mild term at this point, and the real concern that people have in the wake of the election, and particularly as we're seeing cabinet positions being appointed. What are your thoughts on the political climate that we're in right now?
Well, frankly, I'm scared to death. Ever since the election, I think people know my wife is Josie Heath. Josie and I are obviously involved in lots of things. I cannot go anywhere without people just voicing their just total frustration, disappointment, almost anger about what's happening. When you look at some of these appointments, what it means to environmental issues, what it means to healthcare, women's reproductive rights, climate change, all of these things, I think we're all, those of us, and certainly I fought for these issues in the Colorado Senate the last 8 years, all of these things are at risk. And I think that builds up not only frustration, but just a real genuine concern. And I think that's what's leading to all of this. And obviously, Boulder is an island unto itself in some respects. But, you know, I've been at a lot of meetings in Denver as well. And I think people are just concerned. And you know, the Republican Party in this state did not support Donald Trump. In fact, they unanimously voted for someone else. And I have not had conversations with them, but they're in an awkward position. The president is a Republican, and they also now have the House and the Senate and the Congress, and so they're in an awkward position. But I can tell you this: I am very, very concerned, and I think it goes beyond just thinking about it. I mean, what he's done and these appointments, I think, are scary to probably the people, certainly all the 80% who voted for me in 4 years ago, I would think would share my concern.
What do you think, though, realistically, can a Trump administration do? Because we have heard voices who are expressing very real concern and fear about, you know, the appointments and the rhetoric that's been used. But then other people are urging caution or to put things in perspective, giving that, you know, there's only so much an administration can do. But I suppose if you look at executive orders, if you look at Supreme Court nominations, there really is quite a lot that can change. I mean, what are your thoughts on what can happen on an immediate level that we might see happening that you're concerned about?
I think the environmental areas are the ones that I would have the most immediate concern, and his ability literally with a stroke of the pen to change so many of the things that we've done, going towards renewable energy and all of that movement. That I think is at risk almost immediately. Some of the other things that I talked about, changing the tax structure, if you listen to what Mitch McConnell and others are saying, they're going to deal with the Affordable Care Act immediately. We've put what 300,000 more people, I think, on the rolls in Colorado and across the country. It's millions that have health care for the first time. All of that is at risk. And they're going to take that up, I'm told, the first month of the session. And clearly, Donald Trump, as president, would sign it. And, you know, that could happen pretty immediately. And I think that puts all of our health care systems at risk. So those are the things that could happen immediately. Changing tax structures and all of that is going to take longer. But with the majority in the House and the Senate and his expressed willingness to sign these things, it could happen in a session.
Well, what about what's happening here at a state level? You served two terms in the state Senate and 8 years in state politics. What do you think has changed over the past 8 years?
We do better. Let me start it out with the positive, the glass half full. We do better, much better than we do at the federal level. I'm proud of some of the things even that we did the last 2 years in the minority, particularly around workforce development and all of those kinds of issues. But when you get into the things that I just expressed a concern at the federal level, I'm equally concerned about them here because the Senate is a very conservative Senate, and I don't think they're going to change their minds on the things that where they voted before, and it seems to me it's over the 8 years it's more polarized rather than less on the critical issues.
And why do you think that is? Why are we seeing a more polarized state legislature over the 8 years? Let alone what's happening at the national level, but at a state level, why is it becoming more polarized?
On the Republican side in this state, all the more moderate Republicans were not successful in their primaries. The Republican voters tended to favor, not tended to, they did favor the more conservative candidates, the ones that would be less willing to compromise on some of these critical issues. And I think that they overwhelmingly now are the majority as opposed to the more moderate. And you could say, to some extent, on the Democratic side, the ones that would tend to be more progressive are there as well. So I mean, we reflect somewhat the national scene. Although I do think we have the ability on a number of key issues to compromise, and we did. But when you get to the issues that I'm talking about, environmental issues, in Colorado, Tabor, and the ability to fund state government. And for me, education is a passion. I've been on this show with you all a number of times talking about my absolute such concerned that we're not funding education at either K-12 or higher ed level. That I don't see that changing. I mean, there just is an unwillingness on the Republican side to fund government at a level that I think it should be.
Why do you think we're seeing those more conservative Republicans defeat the more moderate Republicans at a primary level and then ultimately end up in the state house? You know, is it truly reflective of Colorado voters? Is it the influence of outside elements or even Colorado based organizations like the Rocky Mountain Gun Owners Association, which really were behind a lot of those the recall efforts targeting Republicans who voted around gun control issues? I mean, what are some of the dynamics at play? Do you think it's truly representative of Colorado voters?
On the Republican side, yes, it is. You'd have to agree with that. As you know, I ran Proposition 103 in 2011 to fund education and change the tax policies. We got 35% of the vote. Those are the 35% hardcore Democrats. I think it's reflective. This is a state that that really believes strongly in less government and lower taxes. I mean, it's a hue and cry that you hear at every committee meeting that I sat in. That's what the Republicans would say. If this increases government in any way, if it's going to have any kind of tax increase, we don't care what it's about. We're not going to support it. And I think that's where certainly the majority of the Republicans in this state are.
And yet, at the same time, we are seeing progressive state ballot measures, say, being passed by voters. If you look at the minimum wage, a state ballot measure. Also, the medical aid in dying measure, which was, you know, often supported by certainly progressive legislators. You know, we are seeing kind of a mixed bag in terms of what voters are approving here in the state.
A mixed bag is clearly it. We on the other hand, we passed what I considered to be a constitutional measure that's going to make it harder to pass initiatives in the state. Constitutional initiatives, yes, we had it go both ways. But I think when you're just looking at it from Republican politics and who they nominate, let's forget the going beyond that for the moment. Clearly, it is a very, very conservative electorate on the Republican side. There's enough moderates when you get beyond it, coupled with what would be some of these progressive measures although I don't think right to die really is a partisan issue. I think that's a real philosophical issue. That was one that I think crossed over. But yeah, we've got a very conservative Republican electorate out there. Less government, lower taxes. That's their mantra, and they stick by it.
We're speaking with Raleigh Heath this morning here at KGNU. Raleigh Heath served two terms in the state Senate as a Democrat, and we're talking this morning about his role also now as an elector, because on December 19th at noon, he will be one of the state electors signing his name for Hillary Clinton, because that is who the state voted for in terms of the presidential race, and that will happen at Governor Hickenlooper's office at noon on Monday, December 19th. Just if we take a look at state politics in the context of the national arena, Colorado did vote for Hillary Clinton. Colorado was also the scene of the No Trump, the Dump Trump, the Never Trump Republican campaign ahead of the RNC during the summer as well. But Trump was successful, I suppose, if you look at Pueblo, a very working class part of the state that has traditionally been a Democratic stronghold. Trump also nationally, you know, took some of those very traditional strongholds away from the Democrats, seemingly by appealing to those blue collar workers. As a Democrat, as somebody who served in state politics for two terms, for 8 years here in Colorado, how do you think it has gotten to the point where a billionaire who lives in a literally gilded palace in Manhattan became a voice from the working class and took that message away from the Democrats?
Well, he used NAFTA, he used a lot of our federal agreements, which and use this whole notion of a lot of companies are moving their operations, whether it's to Mexico or to China, and basically preyed on that aspect of it. The irony is our unemployment right now is at the lowest. We in this state have so many skilled jobs that are vacant. I mean, we don't have the skilled workforce, and this has been a pinch in mind for forever and ever. When I owned a machine shop and then ran an international company and all the things we need to do to increase our workforce. But he was able to basically say, we're going to bring jobs back to Ohio. I listened to interview on national on NPR where they were basically talking to blue collar workers in that further north east county of Ohio, right on the Pennsylvania border, and this is a county that had gone over 20% for Obama the last two times, and Trump carried it, and it was all based on their pocketbook. That they truly believed, from what Trump said, that he would do away with NAFTA, he'd bring all of these jobs back to this country. He'd literally force companies that had moved their businesses overseas to bring them back. I mean, he convinced people to do that. In Pueblo, it was a steel town, as you know. I mean, and that town was that. That mill, which is virtually closed at this point. I mean, it was the same message to them that these northeastern Ohio people heard, that he truly was going to be their savior. And unfortunately, I think we made some tactical errors, and I don't think emphasized jobs enough. There is no question the rich have gotten richer and the poor have gotten poorer over the last 8 years, which is too bad, even though we've got people back to work. But those on the lower end of the scales have not seen their wages go up. Their health care costs have gone up, and they feel caught in the middle. And they looked at him as their savior, and we didn't and weren't able or didn't try, I'm not in some instances, to convince them otherwise.
What do you think the Democratic Party, if we just look at what's happening here in Colorado, needs to do to either reclaim the narrative of being the supporters of the working and middle class, whether or not it's the narrative or what actions do they need to take to actually be that supporter of the working and middle class?
Well, I think we did a much better job. I was in charge of running the state Senate races for the Democratic Party. We talked a lot about jobs. And Hillary won Colorado. So I think we did a much better job than particularly the Midwest. I grew up in Wisconsin. Wisconsin went for Trump at the end, albeit by a handful of votes, less than 100,000 votes. So I think we did a better job in Colorado. But we weren't able to get the state Senate back. We gained seats in the House, and Clinton won. So you'd have to say on a comparative basis we did well. Unfortunately, not well enough. So I think our message is, I think, one that does appeal to more people. It obviously didn't in Pueblo. And I've been to Pueblo a lot, and when I ran for governor, I picked Bill Thibault, who was the majority leader of the Senate at that time from Pueblo. So I've spent a lot of time there, and they're wonderful, wonderful people. But again, it was that same message that we've lost our jobs, and here's at least somebody speaking to us that's going to do their best to get them back. They didn't believe we would.
A lot of people say that people really should be paying attention to state legislation, to even, you know, city council, because a lot of local politics is what's impacting your day-to-day life. As we are just a few weeks away from the start of the 2017 legislative session, what are your thoughts on what's going to happen at the State House in the upcoming session?
Well, you know, what was that old adage? Think globally, act locally. It's true. And I think that's why I enjoyed the Senate job so much, because, as you know, I did town halls. You all were kind enough to invite me here to have a chance to speak to the people. And, you know, it was a fabulous, fabulous job for me. And we had good attendance at town halls and so forth. But we need to pay much more attention to who we elect. There's just no question about it. You know, when I spent, 40 years knocking on doors, it was always amazing to me. I literally, this last session, had to explain to somebody the difference between a state senator and a U.S. senator. And this was a woman at the end of it. She said, I guess I should have paid more attention to civics when I was in school. Well, we just need to get people more engaged. And maybe, just maybe, this Trump victory and all that's, I think, is going to happen, which for me is not going to be positive. Maybe that will get people to understand that it does make a difference. And don't forget, the state legislature does the redistricting, and I chaired the redistricting in 2010, which draws the districts for the House of Representatives. And the Republicans now have the majority, 32 state legislatures, I think, and governors. So they've paid more attention to local things than we have, and we'd better start doing it if we want to have a voice on the national level again.
And sir, in terms of some of the maybe unfinished business from previous sessions, one of them being the hospital provider fee and using that as a way to help fund some of the chronically underfunded programs. It's quite a complex issue, but I know this was something that we have discussed here on KGNU. Remind our listeners exactly what it is and what your thoughts are for its future now, given the makeup of the State House.
Well, this all goes back to the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, which was passed in 1992, which basically says you cannot increase taxes, the legislature can't increase taxes at all. We can reduce taxes, but not increase them. And the only way, if you're going to increase taxes, you have to go to a vote of the people. And then there's a formula. And the hospital provider fee was revenue that came into the state. And that got counted against the how much you could spend, the limit on how much spending. And the idea was to take that out of revenue, because really it's not. It's strictly a pass-through. It's federal funds that basically go and pay for Medicare. So what that hospital provider fee, the bill that was presented, would basically take that out of the revenue, so it would not be counted against the Tabor surplus, which would in fact free up this last year about $282 million. Which could be used anywhere, but it would have been used certainly for education and to a large extent. And again, this goes back to the less government, lower taxes. We had all 17 Democrats in the Senate pass the House to basically make it an enterprise, is the word we're talking about, which would take it out of the Tabor revenue. And it got to the Senate, and it failed, basically because, as the Senate president said, this would increase government. It would increase, in their words, taxes, and they're not going to support it. And they're not going to support it again this year. It's just not going to happen.
You've been a real advocate for public education, and you have been involved at a state level in passing legislation and trying to have state measures passed to increase funding of public education, which has really been at the bottom of all of the state rankings. Colorado really not doing well in terms of public education funding. What are your thoughts for public education going forward, looking at Donald Trump's appointments and what's going to be happening here at the state?
Well, the Secretary of Education that he has appointed has been a strong advocate for vouchers, which would allow the state to spend public funds for other than public education.
But people could get a voucher and essentially transfer the public education dollars allocated to the student to charter schools or private schools or religious schools.
Correct. And the state has always voted against that, not supported that. I strongly believe in public education, and I have not supported it either. And there's going to be a huge push for that. how far that goes. Douglas County tried something like that, and it was held not to be a constitution, not to be legal. But there's going to be a huge push for that. And the Republicans talk about that as choice, that we should give overall choice. And it seems to me, yes, we give choice. But if you want to do it, then you should pay for it. And I firmly believe that. I think public education is the backbone of a democracy, that we're going to give everybody the chance to get educated in the public schools. And particularly now when we have such little funding, that would really devastate our public education system. So I think that's going to be a huge fight. And we'll see where it goes. But that's another one of the huge concerns I have about the Trump appointments.
To finish on maybe a positive note, you've served 2 terms, 8 years at the state Senate. You're now heading into retirement with your wife, Josie Heath, who's also spent many, many years in public service at the helm of the Community Foundation of Boulder County.
And was county commissioner and ran for the U.S. Senate twice.
Both of you have illustrious careers and experience. You know, what is next for you, and do you see bright spots, and what can people do to move out of a state of anger and, you know, paralysis if they are upset about the election results and some of the appointments and the future?
Well, there's always another election. And admittedly, at the presidential level, it's 4 years down the road. But for Congress and for the state races, it's 2 to 4 years. So I just you got to get involved, and you've got to pay attention. And there's so many ways to do it, and particularly in Boulder. I mean, there are so many boards at the state at the city and county level. And I always loved it when we had people come down and testify on my bills from Boulder County, and I had wonderful support that way. By the way, I've got to say, what a privilege it's been to serve. People of Boulder were wonderful in terms of their supporting the things that they and I believed in. So it was a real privilege. I'll get emotional about it a little bit, but just got to stay involved. I mean, it's just when you can't just walk away and say, throw up our hands and we're gonna. You know, a lot of people say we're gonna move to Canada, we're gonna do this. This is a wonderful country, and things change, and you can make a difference. I guarantee you can make a difference. So whether it's at the city level and getting on a board or a commission, or the county level, and certainly at the state level, where I'm going to continue, I think, to be involved, hopefully on a board or two. That's what we need to do, is don't give up the ship, just fight for another day.
Raleigh Heath, thank you very much.
Thank you.